We're gonna start from the bottom, yeah, the mission of the bottom of Kufnun and Vav Amid Beis.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the Mishnah says like this. The Mishnah says, Mechaskenes haduluin lifnei habehima, v'yesa nevela lifnei haklovim. Rab Yehuda omer, im lo haisa nevela me'erev Shabbos, asura lefi she'ina men amuchan. The Mishnah presents a machlokes about the following. Let's say I have pumpkins or a gourd, or let's say I have a carcass of an animal that died, and I want to feed them to my animals. So the Mishnah says, according to the Chachamim, you're allowed to take the gourd, take the carcass of the animal, and cut it up and feed it to your dogs. It's totally mutter to do. However, Rab Yehuda says, that you would only be allowed to do that if the animal already died from before Shabbos. If the animal died on Shabbos itself, then it's considered muktzah, and you would not be allowed to even touch the animal, let alone cut it up and feed it to your dogs. So the Gemara explains, Itmar, Amar Ula, Halacha Kerab Yehuda. So comes Ula and says, that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. What exactly is this referring to? So it's obviously a reference to the Mishnah that we just quoted, but also in general, as we'll see, we've mentioned this machlokas probably already 100 times in this Masechta, the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon regarding the parameters of Hilchos Mukta, where Rabbi Shimon effectively denies 95% of Hilchos Mukta. We'll see there are a couple of exceptions to that in a second. Rabbi Yehuda, generally speaking, subscribes to most of Hilchos Mukta. So Ula buys into Rabbi Yehuda's statement in our Mishnah. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda says that you're not allowed to cut up the carcass of an animal to feed to your dogs on Shabbos unless the animal died from beforehand is just another one of the many statements of Rabbi Yehuda in this Masechta that reflects his general disposition that he subscribes to Hilchos Mukta. So Ula says, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, we subscribe to Hilchos Mukta. And the Gemara continues, V'yafrav savar halacha ka Rabbi Yehuda, midakarche dezuze, derav asar ushmol sharei. Rav also subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda based on a case that we actually mentioned way back in the beginning of this Masechta, back in the Yutes. The Gemara has the case of karche dezuze. Karche dezuze was this like tarp that they used to throw over the merchandise on boats. So according to Rav, you're not allowed to move that tarp on Shabbos, because again, he assumes that is also going to be considered muktzah. So obviously, Rav also subscribes to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. And then the Gemara says, "V'yaf Levi savar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda." Levi also subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda's position. How do we know that? Ki ha de Levi ki havu ma'ase treifsa lekamei biyom etava lo hava chazile ela ki yosef akil kalita da amar dilma lo miskasha v'yafilu lechlavim lochazia. Whenever someone would come to Levi with a shayla regarding an animal, let's say there was an animal that was shechted, and they wanted to know if the animal is a treifa, is the animal kosher, does the animal have some kind of a mortal defect in it on Yontif, they would bring the animal in front of Levi on Yontif. Levi would only paskin that shayla if he was sitting next to a garbage dump. Why dafka a garbage dump? Because in case it turned out that the animal was in fact a treifa, Levi held that you're not allowed to feed a treifa to your dogs, you have to throw it away in the garbage. So clearly the fact that Levi was so insistent on paskining the shayla in front of a garbage dump, because he says that you're not allowed to feed this carcass to your dogs, that obviously means that he also subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda, and he also subscribes to the concept of Hilchos Mukta. So these are all the Amoraim who buy into Rabbi Yehuda's position. On the other hand, the Gemara says, Ushmuel Amar Halacha Kareb Shimon. So Shmuel disagrees with this. Shmuel, again, this was the machlokas we just cited a few lines ago about the case of the tarp that you throw on top of the merchandise on the boat. Shmuel actually thinks that that's mutter to move that on Shabbos. So clearly, he holds like Rabbi Shimon, where he basically does not subscribe to Hilchos Mukta. Vav Ziri Safar Halacha Kareb Shimon. Ziri also holds like Rabbi Shimon. Disna, the Mishnah tells us, Behema Shemisa Lo Yezizena Mimakom. And the Mishnah says that if an animal dies on Shabbos, you're not allowed to move the animal. Vitirgama Ziri Bevehem. Ziri qualifies that statement. Ziri says that you're only not allowed to move a carbon that died on Shabbos. Why? What's the difference between a carbon and a regular animal for these purposes? So the difference being is that a carbon, if let's say a carbon died naturally before you offered it as the carbon, so then you would not be allowed to feed that to your dog. So that's really muktzah according to everyone. Even according to Rav Shimon, that would be a problem because it has absolutely no use whatsoever. Whereas a regular animal, a chulin animal, so it has no kedusha, if the animal dies on Shabbos, according to Rabbi Shimon, you're allowed to feed it to your dogs. So the fact that Ze'iri qualifies this statement, qualifies the Mishnah in Beitza, and says that this halacha, that I'm not allowed to feed my animal that died on Shabbos to the dogs, is only true regarding a carbon, but not a regular animal, implies that Ze'iri also subscribes to Rabbi Shimon, namely that he does not subscribe to Hilchos Mukta in most cases. Then the Gemara says, V'yaf Rabbi Yochanan amar halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Yochanan also seems to subscribe to Rabbi Shimon's position. So the Gemara asks, Umi amar Rabbi Yochanan, is that really true? V'ha amar Rabbi Yochanan halacha k'stam Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan, in general, throughout Shas, always paskins like the stam Mishnah, right? Stam Mishnah means a Mishnah which states a halacha without any sort of attribution. It doesn't list a Tana who would be the author of that statement. Usnan, we have a Mishnah in in Mesachas Beitza that says Ein Mevakim Eitzim Min Akoros V'Lo Min Akoros Nishbura B'Yantif. The Mishnah Mesachas Beitza, again a statement without attribution, or what we call a Stam Mishnah, tells us that a person is not permitted to chop down wood from these beams of wood that broke on Yontif. So the fact that Rabbi Yochanan, generally subscribes to a Stam Mishnah, and this Stam Mishnah Meseches Beitza tells us that you're not allowed to chop down wood on Yontif from a broken beam of wood, that would lead us to believe that Rabbi Yochanan does in fact subscribe to Hilchos Mukta like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Shimon. So that seems to contradict what the Gemara just said a second ago. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a kasha. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Hahu Rabbi Yosi Bar Yehuda Masneila. The Gemara says, no, that Mishnah Beitza was not a Stam Mishnah like we thought. It wasn't just a Mishnah without attribution. Rather, it was the position of Rabbi Yosi Bar Yehuda. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is not bound to follow every single Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan is entitled to disagree. In fact, the Gemara says that even though Rabbi Yochanan was technically an Amora, Rabbi Yochanan was one of the few people who was kind of a borderline town, a borderline Amora. He lived during that transition period. So there are many times where the Gemara will say that Rabbi Yochanan is entitled to disagree. And even if you want to say he's just a regular Amora, but still, he can side with other Tanaim who can disagree with this Mishnah. So since this is not a Stam Mishnah, this Mishnah was attributed to Rabbi Yosi Bar Yehuda, Rabbi Yochanan is not obligated to follow what it says in this Mishnah, Maseches Beitza. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Tashma, another Braisa, also a Maseches Beitza. The Gemara says, Maschilin ba'arema sateven, avalo be'itim shememukta. The Braisa Maseches Beitza tells us again that if let's say I want to start a fire on Yontif, so I'm allowed to start a fire using straw, using a pile of hay or straw, but I'm not allowed to use a wood that was previously set aside. Wood that was not set aside from beforehand. In other words, any wood that was left out. Let's say, for example, behind the house or in my warehouse, I would not be allowed to use it on Yontif for a fire. So again, don't you see from here? Again, this seems to be a Stam Mishnah. There's no attribution in this Mishnah. And as we pointed out before, Rabbi Yochanan always follows what it says in the Stam Mishnah. So it sounds like Rabbi Yochanan should subscribe to Hilchos Muktzah, which again would contradict what we said before. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a kashya. Hasam ba'arzei va'ashuchei de Muktzah machmas chesron kis afilu Rabbi Shimon Moda. Comes the Gemara and says that case in the Gemara Miseches Beitza was talking about very expensive types of wood, cedar wood, and wood from other kinds of trees that are considered to be very, very expensive. And one of the few types of muktzah to which Reb Shimon subscribes is called muktzah machmas chesron kis. When something is very, very expensive, so for example, let's say a person leaves out. I don't know, a person gets a new iPhone. Let's say the newest iPhone is worth, I don't know, $1,100. So that's considered muktzah machmas chesron kis. If you leave your a new iPhone out, even on Shabbos, even if it's going to get ruined, you're not allowed to move that at all. It's completely usher to move because that's called muktzah machmas chesron kis. And even Reb Shimon, who generally denies most of Hilchos Muktzah, does subscribe to this particular type of Hilchos Muktzah. So therefore, the Gemara says that the case in the Mishnah was talking about expensive wood. What was it?
Meaning
the case of muktzah machmas chesron kis just means that if I have an item which is very, very expensive, so I have the newest iPhone. So the newest iPhone usually costs, I don't know, $1,000, whatever it is. So let's say I accidentally left my phone out in the sun or in the rain or whatever. So normally the halacha is if I have an item that's even if it's muktzah, but if I left it out in the sun or the rain, we have a special heter called mechama letzel. We spoke about this earlier in the mesechta that if something's going to get ruined, so generally you're allowed to move it. However, the Gemara says explicitly in a number of places, including here, that when something is muktzah machmas chesron kis, when it's extremely expensive, when it's a new iPhone, it's whatever it is, then you're not allowed to move it. Now again, there is a discussion about the details of this halacha, like what's considered chesron kis. What if I have an item that's not necessarily expensive, but it's let's say like a specialty tool. Let's say it's like a kind of like a shechita knife or a moel's knife. We also spoke about this a little bit earlier in the mesechta. If I have a specialty item, maybe that's also called chesron kis, even if it's not necessarily expensive, but it's something which is valuable to me. What if I have an item which has sentimental value? These are all questions about the details of chesron kis. But the bottom line is, if something does qualify as chesron kis, then even Reb Shimon agrees that you would not be allowed to move that on Shabbos. Okay.
When you say not allowed to move it, not even allowed to move it for the shinui, or not allowed
to
move
it? Yeah, you're not allowed to move it at all.
If you need its place, makomo,
I mean, in a case where it's mechama letzel, you're not going to need it letzorech makomo, right? In other words, because if it's sitting out in the sun, so then, I mean, presumably you're not.
That's a specific example.
Correct. Yeah. Generally, we assume you're not allowed to move muktzah machmas chesron kis under any circumstance. It's the equivalent of like a rock, okay. Unless you set it aside from before Shabbos, you would not really be allowed to move for any purpose, including tzorech gufo or makoma. Okay, so the Gemara now says Tashma ein mashkin v'shochten es hamidbarios av a mashkin v'shochten es habayasos. So the Gemara now asks a third question based on a mission in Beitza according to Rabbi Yochanan. Again, remember the way the Gemara started this discussion is because the Gemara is assuming that every time we find the Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan must subscribe to that Stam Mishnah, which is generally true throughout Shas. So now the Gemara finds a Mishnah all the way at the end of Maseches Beitza that discusses makes the following distinction that says that a person is not permitted on Yontif to give water to wild animals, but you are allowed to give water to domesticated animals. What's the difference exactly? What's the issue with giving water in general? So the issue with giving water here, basically, the Gemara in Beitza explains, is that when you give them a lot of water, it fattens up the animal, and it makes it easier to skin the animal after you shecht it. So the Gemara says in Mishnah in Beitza that for wild animals, you would not be allowed to do that, because since the halach is that you're not allowed to tend to wild animals on Shabbos or Yontif, you would not be allowed to give them water, but for domesticated animals it would be permissible. So again, the question is, I have a Stam Mishnah. The Stam Mishnah tells me that tells me that I'm not allowed to give water to wild animals. So again, if Rabbi Yochanan really subscribed to Rabbi Shimon, really denied Hilchos Mukta, why would you not be allowed to give water to even if they are Mukta, who cares? Rabbi Shimon denies Hilchos Mukta. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a good kasha.
What about working too hard to give it to a wild animal? You know, like
you're saying in terms of Tircha. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Yeah. That could also be a factor here, but this Gemara really is addressing the question of Mukta. It's addressing the question of what Rabbi Yochanan holds regarding Mukta. So the Gemara says that even though it's true that we have a Stam Mishnah at the end of Maseches Beitza that would seem to imply that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan Stam Acharina Ashkach, Rabbi Yochanan had another Stam Mishnah actually in our Masechta earlier in the Masechta, right back on Daf Kuf Mem Gimel, it also appears in the beginning of Maseches Beitza, where the Mishnah earlier told us, Beishamay Omre Magbiyan Me'ala Shulchan Atzamos Uklipin, Uvesel Omre Mesalek Es Atavla Kula. The Amar Rav Nachman Anu Ein Lanu Ela Beishamay Kareb Yehuda Ubeisila Kareb Shimon. So comes the Mishnah earlier and makes the following distinction presents the following machlokas. Let's say, for example, I want to clean my Shabbos table, but I have some things on the table that are muktzah. I have, I don't know, chicken bones, fish bones, shells, things that are completely muktzah, things that you're not really allowed to move. So the question is, how exactly do I go about cleaning the table? So the way the Mishnah presents it initially is that according to Beishamay, not a problem. Just pick up all the shells and the bones, it's fine, and just throw them in the garbage and then you're okay. But according to Beis Hillel, no, you can't do that, because according to Beis Hillel, those things are muktzah. So the only way that you would be able to clear your table is to basically take the whole tablecloth, go outside and shake the whole thing out and just let everything kind of fly all over the place. But Rav Nachman points out that we actually reverse these opinions. We actually think that Beis Hillel is the one who says that you could pick them up individually, whereas Beis Shammai thinks that you have to shake the whole thing out. And again, the reason being is because we have a general tradition that Beis Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda and Beis Hillel holds like Rav Shimon. Holds like Rav Shimon, that, and again, we obviously almost always follow Beis Hillel, that means that there is another Stam Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos earlier in Daf Kuf Mem Gimel that would lead us to believe that we paskin like Rav Shimon. So in other words, now we have two competing Mishnahs. We have a Mishnah at the end of Beitza that implies that we follow Rabbi Yehuda because it says you're not allowed to give water to the wild animals. So that would imply because they're Muktzah. Then we have a Mishnah, 13 Daf ago on Kuf Mem Gimel that says that, again, according to the reversal of the opinions, according to Rav Nachman, that we paskin like Beis Hillel, that you are allowed to pick up the shells and the bones, implying that we do not subscribe to Hilchos Muktzah. So now that we have, these competing Mishnayas, so Rabbi Yochanan is entitled to follow whichever Stam Mishnah he wants. He's not bound to the other Stam Mishnah because there's a competing Stam Mishnah that says the exact opposite. Okay, fine. So now the Gemara presents another issue here. The Gemara says, "Pligi bar Rav Acha v'Ravina." The Gemara now presents a machlokes between Rav Acha and Ravina. Chad Amar b'chol haShabbos kula halacha k'Rav Shimon levar mi muktzah machmas mias umaynihu ner yashan. Chad Amar b'muktzah machmas mias nami halacha k'Rav Shimon levar mi muktzah machmas isher umaynihu ner shehidliku ba ba'osa Shabbos avo muktzah machmas chesron kis afilu Rav Shimon moda disnan kol akilim nitolam b'Shabbos chutzim maser agadov yasei shel macharisha. This is kind of like a good summary and a culmination of really like a lot of the things that we spoke about throughout this Masechta regarding Hilchos Muktzah, where the Gemara presents the following machlokas. The Gemara says that according to one of the Amoraim, we always paskin like Reb Shimon when it comes to Hilchos Muktzah, which means that we effectively deny most of Hilchos Muktzah with the exception of Muktzah Machmas Mius. What's Muktzah Machmas Mius? So the Gemara gives an example of an old candle. Muktzah Machmas Mius means something which is Muktzah because it's disgusting. So let's say, for example, I have a candle the candle was lit before Shabbos, so that's not that, that. So there's no issue of malacha going on, but the candle starts to drip wax and it starts to get all you know, disgusting, whatever it is. So the Gemara says that's called mukta machmas mias. So the Gemara says that we paskin like Reb Shimon, except in the case of mukta machmas mias, where we follow Rabbi Huda, where we say that if something is disgusting, you would not be allowed to move it on Shabbos. That's according to one version in the Amoraim. The other Amora says no, that even mukta machmas mias, we follow Reb Shimon, namely that it's mutter, that there's no issue. However, the Gemara says that the case where we disagree with Reb Shimon is what's called mukta machmas iser. So mukta machmas iser would be an example. Let's say a candle was lit by a Jew on Shabbos, right? So that's mukta machmas iser. A person violates Shabbos and lit a candle. So in that case, we would, again, this is according to the other opinion in the Amoraim. In that case, in other words, we would disagree with Reb Shimon and say you would not be allowed to move the candle. But the Gemara does say that mukta machmas chesrum kis, something which is mukta because it's expensive, even Reb Shimon himself agrees that you would not be allowed to move that. And the basis, the source for that halacha is a Mishnah that we had earlier on in the Masechta that told us, again, if you remember, when we first introduced Hilchos Muktzah back in the 17th Perek, the Mishnah said that there was a historical progression regarding Muktzah, that originally in the days of Nehemiah, so we were very machmir about pretty much everything. We basically didn't allow it to carry almost anything in terms of Hilchos Muktzah, and then eventually we got a little bit more mikol, and then eventually we allowed pretty much everything except for a few things. So the few things the Mishnah earlier told us that you're not allowed to handle on Shabbos are what's called a Maser HaGadol, which is like the blade of a plow. And I'm sorry. The Maser HaGadol is a large saw, and the Yaseh Shel Macharisha is the blade of a plow. Those things, which are very expensive, or again, they're specialty items that, you know, only certain people use. So there, the Gemara says that even Reb Shimon himself will subscribe to Hilchos Muktzah in those scenarios, like we said in the Gemara a little bit earlier. Okay, so now the Mishnah says Mefira Nedarim B'Shabbos V'Neshalim L'Nedarim Shein L'Tzorach HaShabbos. The Gemara is going to explain this point a little bit more fully, but basically the Mishnah says that a person can do what's called Hafaras Nedarim on Shabbos, and you can also petition a Neder on Shabbos. What does that mean exactly? So, you know, we're all familiar with the term with the concept of Ataras Nedarim from Erev Rosh Hashanah. So Hafaras Nedarim is basically the same exact thing as Hataras Nedarim. The only difference is that Hataras Nedarim has to be done with either one Talmud Chacham or three regular people, which is, you know, what we usually do on Erev Rosh Hashanah. You get three people there, you know, they sit down, everyone reads all those paragraphs about, you know, getting rid of all your Nedarim. Whereas Hafaras Nedarim is when a husband or a father is mefir the Nedarim of his wife or his daughter who's under the age of 12. So again, these are all psukim in the beginning of Parshas Matos that talk about this. It's the same concept, same idea of undoing a Neder, but it's just a, you know, slight technical difference about who's the one who's facilitating that hafara. And then in contrast to that, the Mishnah talks about what's called nishalin. So nishalin or she'ela is when you petition a neder. What that means is let's say a person took a neder for whatever. They took a neder to, I don't know, they said that this is going to, you know, this item is going to be usher to me. And then afterwards they come to a chacham and they say that, you know, had I been aware of circumstances X and Y when I made the nether, I never would have taken the nether in the first place. That's called she'ela. In other words, if a chacham can find what's called like a pesach, they can find a reason why your nether should never have been effective in the first place because you were unaware of certain information. So that's she'ela. That completely undermines the nether. Hafara doesn't undermine a nether. Hafara acknowledges the nether, but it just says that I want to undo the nether that I made. In other words, there was no good reason. In other words, the basis for my nether initially was still valid. It's just that now I want to undo the nether. That's called hafara, or in the case of a chacham, called hatara. Whereas she'ela means is that my whole nether was based off a faulty premise because I thought X, Y, and Z, but it turns out that X, Y, and Z wasn't true in the end. So the Mishnah says that both of these,
Rabbi, I thought if I make a nether not to put on tefillin, I thought I'd said nothing. So if I make,
well, that's
nether,
different. That's different.
Not to say kiddush. On Shabbos,
no. So nothing. Okay. So we'll see in the Gemara in a second that these nedarim are not necessarily about Shabbos per se. They could just be nedarim that you're attending to on Shabbos. Now we'll see. The Gemara is going to address this in a second. But basically, as of now, the Mishnah is making the following distinction when it comes to hafaras nedarim. So the Mishnah sounds like you could do hafara for any neder whatsoever on Shabbos, regardless of whether the neder has to do with Shabbos or not. It could be a neder that has nothing at all to do with Shabbos. Whereas when it comes to she'ela, when it comes to petitioning and undermining a neder completely and finding a faulty premise to your neder, so the Mishnah sounds like that the only way you could do that on Shabbos is if the neder is directly related to your enjoyment of Shabbos. So again, we'll see. The Gemara is going to kind of flesh this out in a second.
Rabbi, shouldn't both of them have to be specific?
We'll see. The Gemara is going to address all of this in a second. We'll see. Okay. So then the Mishnah continues. The Mishnah says, "Upokakin es hamaor, umodidin es hamatlis, umodidin es hamikvah." Then the Mishnah adds three seemingly unrelated halachos. The Mishnah says that you are allowed to close a window on Shabbos. Again, the Gemara can explain what all this means. You are allowed to measure a rag in order to see if it's big enough to be makabel tumah. This we spoke about way back, back in the second parak. We spoke about how it has to be 3x3 fingers or 3x3 tefachim in order to be makabel tumah. And you're also allowed to measure a mikvah to ensure that it's at least 40 sa'ah. Normally, there's an isra d'rabanan to measure things on Shabbos, but it sounds like if it's for the purpose of a mitzvah, so it will be mutter. Again, the Gemara is going to explain all of this. Then the Mishnah says, "U'maisa bimei aviv shel Rabbi Tzadok uvimei Abba shel ben Butnis shepokeku es hamaor betafiach v'kashru es hamakida begemi leida im yesh begigas poseach tefachim lav." The Mishnah relates that in the days of the father of Rabbi Tzadok and in the days of Abba shel ben Butnis, they used to do this. They used to close up the window using an earthenware utensil, and they used to tie this earthenware jug using a reed in order to know if the opening in the roof over this area was at least a tefach. And again, the Gemara is going to explain that this is going to have ramifications for Hilchos Tumas Mace. If the opening on top of a roof, if a crack in the roof is less than a tefach, then we basically view the roof as being fully intact. And if it's fully intact and there's a dead body in one of the rooms of the Ohel, then the entire building will become Tameh. But if the crack in the roof is more than a tefach, so then the halach is that just that immediate place where the body is underneath will become Tameh, but the rest of the house, the rest of the area will remain tar. And the Mishnah says, "Umidivram lamanu shapokakin umodadin v'kosh from Shabbos." We see from this Mishnah that you are allowed to open and close windows, that you're allowed to measure and even tie reeds, tie things on Shabbos. So the Gemara now wants to know, "Iboy elahu hafaram." Bein letzorech uvein shelo letzorech u'she'ilo letzorech in shelo letzorech lo u'mishum hachi kapal genumei hadadei. So one option in explaining the first line of the Mishnah is to say that the reason why the Mishnah distinguished between hafaras nedarim and she'ila, meaning again petitioning a neder and undermining it based on a faulty premise, is because that maybe those two things operate with two different standards. Namely, hafara you're allowed to undo regardless of whether it's a Shabbos oriented neder or not. Again, that's what the Mishnah sounds like, because the first words in the Mishnah say mefirin nedarim b'Shabbos. You could do hafara on any neder on Shabbos, and then the next part of the Mishnah says v'nishalim l'nedarim shehein l'tzorech haShabbos, which sounds like when it comes to petitioning a neder, it specifically has to be a Shabbos-oriented neder. That's what the Mishnah sounds like. So one option, in other words, one way to interpret the Mishnah is the way that we just did. In other words, the reason why the Mishnah even bothers to separate between these two examples is because they have two different standards, right? Namely, hafara, any type of neder I can be mefir on Shabbos, whereas when it comes to petitioning a neder, I can only petition a Shabbos-oriented neder on Shabbos. That's option number one. Oh, Dilma, maybe you could say, no, it's not true. Maybe hafara nami l'tzorech in shelo l'tzorech. Maybe one could argue that even hafaras nedarim can only be undone, can only be performed on Shabbos if it's for the purpose of Shabbos. So the question then, of course, is, why would the Mishnah separate between these two halachos if they have the same standards? So the Gemara says, v'hadik ha-polig l'hume ha-dadeh, mishum da hafara in tzorech bezdin, u'she'ila tzricha bezdin. You can argue that still hafara and she'ila still have different standards, just not the different standards that we thought before. In other words, what would the difference be between Hafara and She'ela according to the second version of the Gemara? The difference would be whether you require a Bezdin. So according to the second version of the Gemara, Hafaras Nedarim does not require the presence of a Bezdin, whereas She'ela, if you want to fundamentally undermine a Neder that you took and claim that it was based on a faulty premise, you would require a Bezdin, or at the very least, you would require either three Hedjotos or one Chacham in order to undo that. So the Gemara wants to know, which one is it? In other words, do we insist that your Hafara has to be Shabbos-oriented? Or maybe not. Maybe you could do hafara on any type of neder on Shabbos at all. So the Gemara says, Tashma, the son is Zuti Devei Rav Papa, Mefira Nedarim B'Shabbos L'Tzorech HaShabbos, L'Tzorech HaShabbos In, Shelo L'Tzorech HaShabbos Lo. So comes the first version of the Gemara and basically just paraphrases our Mishnah. And it says that you can be Mefira Nedarim L'Tzorech HaShabbos. So in other words, this line was almost inserted into the Mishnah according to this version, because all the Mishnah said was Mefira Nedarim B'Shabbos. So that implies that I can undo any neder on Shabbos. But now comes this opinion of the Gemara of Zuti Devei Rav Papa, where they claim that no, that you can only be made for Shabbos-oriented Nedarim on Shabbos. You can't be made for regular Nedarim on Shabbos, according to version number one. Then the Gemara says, Lishna Acharina, another version, Ibai Elohu, Litzorech Atshavayu Katane, Vishalo Litzorech Lo, Alma Hafaras Nedarim Yeslies, O Dilma Ki Katane Litzorech, Asha'ilahu De Katane, Aval Hafaras Nedarim Afilu Shalo Litzorech, Alma Hafaras Nedarim Kalayom. Then this version, the Gemara raises a slightly different question. Here, the question is, when the Mishnah uses the word Litzorach, right? Shehein Litzorach HaShabbos, was that referring just to the second half of that line, namely the She'ila, in other words, petitioning the Neder, or was it referring to both lines in the Mishnah? Was it referring to both Hafara and to She'ila? What would the practical difference between those two be? So obviously the practical difference would be whether you can undo non-Shabbos related Nedarim on Shabbos, whether you could do Hafara for a non-Shabbos Neder on Shabbos, but more importantly, for the purpose of Hilchos Neder, the Gemara says that this actually makes a very big difference. If you look at the beginning of Parshas Matos, the Torah talks about cases where a father or a husband hears the neder of his daughter or his wife and wants to undo the neder. So the Torah says explicitly that you can only undo the neder biyom shamo. You only have until the day that you hear. So in other words, let's say you hear about the neder a week later. So you only have that day to undo the neder. The question is, how do you define that day? Does that day mean a 24-hour period? So if I hear the neder at 5 p.m., I have till 5 p.m. tomorrow to decide if I want to undo the neder. Or maybe it means until the end of the halachic day, until Shkia. That can have very significant ramifications, because if a husband hears about the neder 2 minutes before Shkia, then he has 2 minutes to undo the neder. But if you think that it's a 24-hour thing, so then it would make no difference when exactly he hears it, right? So the Gemara says this should be the difference. In other words, if you believe that you have only until Shkia to undo a neder, so that would seem to mean that any type of neder can be undone on Shabbos, because you don't have the luxury of waiting 24 hours till after Shabbos is over to figure out if you want to undo the neder. But if you believe that only Shabbos-oriented Nedarim can be undone on Shabbos, but regular Nedarim cannot, so that would imply that really you have the full 24 hours. And in reality, you shouldn't be able to undo any sort of Neder on Shabbos, if not for the fact that these are Shabbos-related and they're going to undermine your own egg Shabbos. But fundamentally, you should not be allowed to undo any sort of Nedarim. So that's the Gemara's Kasha in the second version. In other words, again, do we say that it's only Shabbos-oriented Nedarim that you can undo, which would mean that you really have 24 hours to undo a Neder after the time that you hear it? Or no, can you undo any neder, which would imply that you only have until Shkia to undo the neder, which again therefore means that you're kind of on the clock here and you have to undo the neder on Shabbos, even if it's not a Shabbos oriented neder. So what's the answer to that question? So the Gemara says, Tashma de Sani Rav Zuti Devera Papi. Mithir Nadarim Shabbos Litzorach Shabbos. Litzorach Hashabbos in Shalom Litzorach Shabbos Lo. Alma Hafaras Nadarim Yes Lies. Comes the Gemara and says that you're only allowed to undo a Shabbos oriented Nether on Shabbos, which again implies that a regular Nether you would not be allowed to undo, meaning that you have a full 24 hours to undo the Nether, because if you didn't, then we would insist that you undo any Nether that comes your way on Shabbos, even if it's not a Shabbos related Nether. Fine. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, Anan Tanan. So comes Rav Ashi and quotes a Mishnah at the end of Maseches Nedarim. The Mishnah says, "Hafaras Nedarim Kol Ayom, the Yish Bedavar LaHakel LaHachmir." The Mishnah at the end of Nedarim says that Hafaras Nedarim is Kol Hayom, the whole day, and that statement can be taken either as a Kula or a Chumra. So what does that mean? Ketzad Nadra Leili Shabbos Mefer Leili Shabbos V'Yom Shabbos Ad Shetechshach Nadra Im Chashicha Mefer Ad Shelo Techshach She'im Lo Hafer Misha Chashicha Eino Yachal LaHafer. The Mishnah in Nedarim tells us explicitly that you only have until Shkia to undo a neder. So in other words, if the nether was made, or he found about the nether, let's say 20 minutes after Tesach Kochavim on Friday night, so you have the whole day until Shabbos is over, until Shkia on Motzei Shabbos to undo the nether. But if you heard about it 5 minutes before Shkia, before Shabbos ended, so then you have to undo it right away. How can our Gemara say, or how can our Mishnah imply that you have 24 hours to undo the nether, when this Mishnah in the Nedarim says explicitly that you only have until Shkia? So the Gemara says, you're right. The Gemara says, tonight. Sanya Hafaras Nedarim Kol Hayom, Rabbi Yosi Bar Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Amru Meis. It's a machlokas between different Tanaim, whether you have a full 24 hours to undo a neder or whether you only have until Shkia. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Vinish Olin Linadarim, that you can petition a neder, that's Litzorach HaShabbos on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Iboy Elohu, Kishalo Hayalo Penai, O Dilma Afilu Hayalo Penai. The question is, when we talk about petitioning a neder on Shabbos, does that mean, in other words, only in a scenario where you didn't have time to petition it before Shabbos? Or no, even if I had time to petition the nether before Shabbos, maybe I'm still allowed to petition the nether on Shabbos itself? So the Gemara says, Tashma, de'iz dakiku le'rabanan le'rav zutra b'rei de'rav zira, v'sharu le'nidre v'yafagav d'hava le'penai. The Gemara says that the Rabbanan helped out Rav Zutra b'rei de'rav zira to undo his nether on Shabbos, even though he had time theoretically to do it beforehand. So you see that even if you had time before Shabbos, you would still be allowed to petition your neder on Shabbos itself. Okay. Then the Gemara, fine. So then we said in the Mishnah, Shapakiku esama orbit tafiach, vikashu esama kida begemi. We said in the Mishnah that a person is allowed to tie his window with an earthenware utensil, and he's allowed to tie a reed in order to measure whether the crack of the roof is at least a tefach, in other words, whether the tumah is going to spread to the entire house or not. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Hilketik Tana Haisa bin Shnei Batim, Vituma Haisa Sham. There was this little alleyway between the two houses, and there was a dead body there. Vegigis Seduka Munachas Al Gabon. There was a crack in the roof. Upakiku Esama Orbit Tafiach, Vikashu Esama Kida Begemi, Leda Imyesham Vegigis Poseach Tafachim Lav. The Gemara says that they wanted to measure the crack in the roof. This is what we were talking about before, that if the crack in the roof was less than a tefach, then that's basically the same as saying that the roof is fully intact. The roof is fully intact, that means that the dead body is going to spread the tumah to the entire house. But if the crack in the roof is more than a tefach, that means that the tumah is going to be limited only to the spot underneath where the dead body is, and the rest of the house is going to remain tar. So the Gemara says that you would be allowed to measure the size of the crack in the roof in order to determine whether that tumah is going to be limited only to the space where it is, or whether it's going to spread. Okay, and then finally, the Mishnah said to me, Devram Lamanu Shapokikin Umodidin Vakosher B'Shabbos. We learned from the Mishnah that you're allowed to open and close a window, and you're allowed to measure, and you're allowed to tie a knot on Shabbos. The Gemara has a story here. Ula Ikla Leveresh Galusa, Chazi Larabba Baravuna, De Yosef Ba'avuna, De Maya Vakamash Achle. Ula went to the Resh Galusa, and he saw that Rabba Baravuna was sitting in a tub of water, and he was measuring the water. So Amar Le Amar Da Amri Rabbana Medida De Mitzvah, Delav Mitzvah Miyamur. So Ula says to him, he says, when the Mishnah says that you're allowed to measure on Shabbos, maybe that's only for a mitzvah. That's like measuring a mikvah, measuring the size of a rag to figure out if it's mekabel tumah. Who says that you're allowed to just stam measure anything on Shabbos? So Amar Le, so Rabbi said to me, yeah, misasik ba'alman. I says, you're right, I was just misasik. I was just doing it stam for no purpose at all. So because he was doing it for no reason at all, there was no real ramification of his measuring the tub. He wasn't going to like learn anything from it. So therefore he says that therefore it's going to be considered to be mutter on Shabbos.